Hey, you're listening to the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. My name is Apollonia Rockwell, and I'll be your host as we dive deep into conversations with business owners, safety experts, and boots on the ground from hazardous work sites around the country to learn what it really takes to make safety achievable in dangerous industries. On this show, we love talking about company culture, total worker safety, and greatness in the workplace. Let's dive in.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. I am your host, Apollonia Rockwell, and I have an incredible guest that I can't wait to share with you, Tony Campbell here. And Tony has an incredible history background. In bio, he's the owner and founder of Workplace Violence Prevention Consultant, specializing in training and mental health first aid and implementing effective workplace violence prevention programs and investigations. And before we get into all that, Tony, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much. And how about yourself?
Oh my gosh, I'm doing good. I feel like this interview couldn't be at a more timely phase of our business right now, because not only has mental health first aid been a forefront for the health and safety EHS world and professionals, geeks and gurus like myself, but we're actually getting a few of our employees through the instructor development course for mental health first aid, because Tony, I'll tell you that we work with a lot of construction companies, a lot of oil and gas companies. So what I am so excited to talk to you today is about your expertise in teaching this course and beyond that, because I know that this isn't just what you do. This is just one teeny little piece of it. But when it comes to mental health in the blue collar industry, let's say, for the boots on the ground, first of all, how taboo is that topic? And still today, and how, maybe just what have you seen in this space evolve just from the last 10 years? How has the conversation changed from the last 10 years to now over mental health? Have the platform. Tell me what you've seen, because I can't imagine.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to discuss it, because I have, as you've said, and I know you've seen it, because, you know, I've done a lot of research and listened to your podcast and all. So great work on your end, and really appreciate what you're doing. As far as the change, you're right, probably 10 years, but I would say definitely within the last four, even just as little as four,
yes.
Industries such as construction.
Yep.
Gambling casinos,
yep.
The military is really getting big into it. You know, I've been in the military going on 36 years now. And so when I got in, I was also in the transportation industry, and
yes.
Those industries were very male dominated,
yeah.
Very, you know, my way or the highway,
yeah.
Kind of industries. And now there really is more of a culture of acceptance that we really do have to take care of ourselves. We do have to look out for others. And one component of that, one big piece, as you said, is mental health first aid.
Yeah.
I come from that blue collar background as well,
okay.
Where I'm not a professional in the mental health field. Basically, the majority of what I've learned is through mental health first aid. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't only helped me professionally. It's also really helped me personally. It's made me a better father.
Yeah. There's more. I love how you already are connecting this, this topic to not just who we are as professionals and how we show up in the workplace, but when we talk about mental health first aid, this applies to who we are as humans. And I feel like that conversation is just now being brought to light now more than ever, like you mentioned, that this, that the old idea that, hey, when you step through those doors at work, when you show up on the field, you're putting all your problems at the front door, right. And you're showing up and you're just clocking in your 10 hours. That's like an old mindset, because in theory, does that sound great? But realistically, that has never been the case, because we're humans, right?
Right.
And so tell us, I mean, like, I'm so interested with your military background and just your, just the experiences that you had. What was it, what did the conversation start to sound like when these industries that you already mentioned started talking about mental health first aid? What did those conversations start to look like, and what are they like now? And what does that training look like in the workplace?
Well, first off, I love your comment about we're all human. And honestly, whether I'm conducting and facilitating a mental health first aid course or a violence prevention course, I say that all the time. We're all human. Okay. Treat one another with respect and dignity. Yeah. Coming from the law enforcement background, there are times when you might not be able to do that for a brief moment, right, but as soon as possible, get right back into it. Mm-hmm. The initial discussion, difficult. As you, I know you know. Because I've listened to some of your podcasts, right, talking about just getting people to accept safety, the basic tenets of safety at the work site or in the workplace was a challenge, right? Because it's a non-revenue generating function. And for business owners and business managers, it's all about making money, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so I really think the pandemic really helped. Now, my agency, I worked for one of the three-letter government agencies about 3 years ago until I stopped and became my own business owner.
Yeah.
So it was difficult to get it through one line of leadership to accept the benefits of it, but I waited them out. My team and I that were really engaged and involved with mental health first aid kind of waited them out. And when we got new leadership in, I remember specifically sitting down as a group and talking about how we had brought mental health first aid really to our law enforcement initially. Yeah. But then we went, you know what? This is for supervisors. This is for our human resources. Then we went, you know what? This is for everybody. Everybody can benefit from this. And so that director of our agency was the director of our what's called securities and installation over our site security, said at the end of that meeting, told the chief of staff, which is the person that does most of the legwork, right, said, go buy 3,000 manuals. And we had a purchase order for 3,000 manuals. We still had to go through an order, you know, all that good stuff. Wow. So, but it's really just a matter of waiting and showing the value and getting that word of mouth from those that come to the courses that, hey, look, this is great. And the beautiful thing about mental health first aid is it's not listening to Tony for 7.5 hours, you know, reading off of slides, because as you can already tell, that would be really boring, right? But it's so engaging and interactive. Literally every 6 minutes, the group is involved, either answering questions, responding, or in group activities, watching videos. So it's never boring. And I haven't had one person ever say they didn't enjoy it. I've had some that were voluntold to be there. And we know how that goes, right?
Yes.
They were voluntold to be there. And so the evaluation probably wasn't the greatest. But then I've also talked to some of those same people later and they went, I get it. I really get it now.
Wow. And so for listeners that maybe it's been a buzzword in their industry or their company, mental health first aid. Oh yeah. Okay. I can imagine what that means. I can imagine what that course covers. Can you give us a breakdown? No, it doesn't have to be too in depth, but what does that class for the person who's never gone through it, they've never experienced it, what the heck does mental health first aid even cover? What goes on in that class?
Love that. Such a great question. Thank you. And really, if you think about it, most of our organizations, we have to go through first aid. Construction probably does. We all definitely go through CPR, AED, but many other professions still go through first aid, right? Just, hey, look, you got a cut. Let me put a bandage on it, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what mental health first aid is, but it's for the mind. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, the best way that I like to describe it is four simple words. We learn how to identify when someone has experienced what we call a mental health challenge.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be a mental illness. Doesn't have to be a diagnosis. It can be, hey, look, I'm getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. I may lose custody of my children.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, work stinks right now. I'm having a difficult time, because we know how the dominoes fall, right?
Yes.
So it shows us how to identify, and I'm saying others, but ourselves too, right? That we may need some help. So identify how we can support ourselves and others through these difficult times. Then we talk about connection. So identify, support, connect when appropriate. We don't always need to see a professional.
Sure.
Luckily, many organizations do have an employee assistance program that should be a great resource to connect. So whoever the professional is, we have now identified, supported, connected if appropriate, and then support again.
Yeah.
If a person leaves, and even say they go check themselves in for some type of check, right, in some type of medical behavioral health area, then we're going to get them back, and we need to be a support for them. They cannot do it alone. We cannot do it alone.
I love that. And you know what? This key phrase is ringing in my head since you said it, is not only identifying when someone is going through a challenge, but when we ourselves are going through a challenge. I mean, oh my goodness. Yes, of course, we want to be there and support our team, our family. But how often is it missed that we are not identifying ourselves and taking care of ourselves before we're trying to help everybody else? I've never heard it quite said as simply as you just did. And I think that that makes a lot of sense to listeners. That's very clear to people. Hey, I need to learn maybe how to identify if I'm not okay. And it's probably really hard for a lot of people to say, hey, I'm not okay. I need to do something here. And so I'd love to hear, especially since you've worked with so many different industries, law enforcement and different large organizations, I'm just curious, do you have any stories of how a class like this has played out in the workplace, or how somebody has maybe, you know, used in simple ways or in large ways some of these practices, and how you've seen it benefit someone's life? Because I'm just imagining a listener, you know, we have a lot of companies, large and small, EHS professionals, or they're small business owners, they're interested in this topic, but it's like, All right. You just gave me a summary of what this class is, what it's about. Share with me what this actually looks like. I'm having a hard time. What does it look like practice? Do you have any stories like that?
Oh, I do. I have about a million. We had 4 hours together, right? We're doing 4 hours today, right?
Today's an 8-hour mastermind, right? I look at the clock. We only have like 10 minutes left. So, but I would love to hear. People love stories. How have you seen this impact people's lives? I'd love to hear it.
Great. Thank you. So just to put closure on what you just said about taking care of ourselves, we do have a saying that we need to keep our gas tank at least as full as we can. And even if I'm seeing a professional, whether it's virtual or in person, as soon as I walk out of that meeting and I pull this thing out, right, this is a great, great tool, but it's also a very immediate deliverer of bad news, right? Yes. And so what gains we made might be lost very quickly. So I love to say we want to keep that gas tank full, because if we're not in a good place, we can't support anyone else.
Yes.
We're not going to be as effective as that. So just closing with that, then just closure on also what mental health first aid, the training encompasses. Really, we talk about what we call early and worsening signs of a mental health challenge, well as how to support. So we literally go through what are some signs, symptoms, I like to call them indicators, that we or someone needs some type of support for early signs. As early as possible intervention is really our best course of action. And I say as possible, because we don't always know what we're looking for. We talk about those, and then we go into crisis situations, which will lead me to my experiences, my stories. And then we close with self-care. Basically, because when we finish with crisis, we talk about suicide and construction, for instance, and some of these other professions, suicide is very prevalent and not very talked about even today for a lot of organizations. It's getting better, as we've already talked about, right? But that'll take me to the closure. Self-care is how we close the course out. Wow. Make sure that when everybody leaves, we've had that woo-saw moment, right? Where we get some deep breaths and then we're off about the rest of our day. Now, wow. Some success stories. I'm going to go to the extreme on this, and that's really going to be, I'm not going to describe it extremely, but I'm going to say suicide.
Yeah.
I have had numerous supervisors that I've trained in mental health first aid come back to me later and say, hey, look, I really think that I saved a life because of what we learned in mental health first aid. I had one supervisor where, because of my role, I said, hey, look, it was a weekend. Said, I'll come in and talk to this individual you're concerned about if you need, but if you have the relationship with them, if you think you can talk to them, let me go through how to ask the question, right? How to kind of have the discussion, some follow-on questions, and then who we can get them to for additional support. And so really, we had just one group that, you know, had a very challenging and traumatizing job in their military service. Some of those were still military with our agency, and or they had gone on and gotten employed as government employees or contractors, but they were doing the same job as they had in the military. Let's just say this. I can't disclose what it was, but what I will say is they made decisions and called for support efforts that sometimes went well, oftentimes did not go well, whether it was our own people that were impacted or even innocent people in the nation that we might be in and everything. So really, that's the biggest one. Now, we have so many other examples of people coming back and talking to us about how, here's another couple of words I love to use, how they felt educated and empowered to do something. And one particular example real quick was literally we held a mental health first aid training on, call it a Tuesday, right? So this individual left that day, bye, see ya, good luck, we'll see you around, right? And then the next day ended up calling me and saying, hey, you know what? I just have to share this with you. I'm so excited. I went to church last night, and I know I'll have you there too. So I went to church last night, and there was somebody that was going through a really difficult time, making a commotion and everything, and I felt like I could help. So I offered to assist that individual, but other people said that they really had it under control, but the individual that wrote me the letter that had attended the course said they would not have felt comfortable doing that without sitting in our training.
Absolutely. Because you know what, Tony, I feel like, and I wanted to catch myself. I was just about to say men in particular, but I'll speak for myself too. I feel like, sure, I am more comfortable with my emotions, and I feel more comfortable maybe approaching a guy or a girl and having a conversation on, hey, I feel like you feel off. I feel something's wrong here. But I will say, since we train primarily blue collar men or who are coming into our training courses, and since I work with these people on a day-to-day basis, I do feel like most men that I've worked with would struggle around how to even begin a conversation like that. And so I could imagine that that person that wrote that letter to you, they said that, hey, I was equipped with some tools and some techniques and maybe some conversation starters on how to have this appropriate yet serious conversation and how to eat right. Am I correct on that? That they just felt equipped to start a conversation. Is that right?
Absolutely. We watch a couple of videos that really demonstrate through panic attacks, supporting somebody experiencing panic attacks, suicide, even psychosis, you know, delusions, hallucinations. But then, so that's great. But we also do three scenarios in mental health first aid. One scenario is, hey, you know what? I'm noticing that something's a little bit off with Apollonia. right? And so I'm concerned. What do I do? Well, you know, of course, one option is ignore it and hope it gets better. But if I've got a good enough relationship with you, why wouldn't I just say, you know what, I've noticed that you seem a little down, a little more irritable than usual, right? Mm-hmm. Would you care to go get a coffee and talk about it, right? And so the scenarios also go into worsening signs and symptoms where now maybe we're making statements like, you know what, my family doesn't need me around. Mm-hmm. Work will do just fine without me. Mm-hmm. And starting to withdraw, right? I used to hang out and go to lunch or get coffee with, you know, each other. And now I'm not doing that, right? So now we're like really concerned. I love it. Okay, I know you're under 30, or at least you were recently, but do you remember the band CNC Music Factory?
No, but I'm also not. I should know more than...
Yeah. You're going to look it up when we get done. And they had a song called Things That Make You Go, Hmm. So it's like, things that make you go, hmm, uh-huh. Yeah,
and
yeah.
People in the class are like, I get it now.
But that is, so if something, in law enforcement, we say if the hair on the back of our neck is standing up, something's not right. And we also train that to people in general. But the way I've done it for mental health first aid and for violence prevention is really, you know, things that make you go, hmm. So if I'm going, hmm, that seems like not typical behavior for Apollonia, then, okay, let's do something about it. Whether I do it or someone else, I talk to somebody else and maybe we do it together or they do it, right? Okay. So that's our second one. And then our third one is in actual crisis where somebody is very close to a severe critical incident, and what do we do? And we talk about getting emergency responders involved if appropriate, right? We are under no obligation as mental health first aiders to act. We want to be safe. We want to be comfortable. We just need to be knowledgeable. If it's not me, then who?
If it's not me, then who? I like that. I love that. Is it, oh my gosh, my mind is going in so many different directions. You describing that. I want to ask you this. Is this course, from all the students that have been through your courses and the organizations that you've worked with, is this course more difficult to teach to men than it is women?
No.
Wow.
And you know why?
Wow.
So a wonderful question. You would think that that's the case, but here's why. It starts at the top on down.
Okay.
When we have a training, get somebody high up in that organization, and if it's a male-dominated organization, get somebody high up in that organization to introduce it. We leave time at the beginning. It's not like Tony and my co-facilitator. I really call us facilitators more than I do instructors, because as adult learners, right, we have a lot of experience. Our job is to get that experience. That's what people remember. They don't remember, you know, all the points on the 100 slides or whatever, right? They remember when you tell an experience and everything.
Yes.
But when we get that top-down leadership buy-in, when we serve lunch or breakfast or both, right, then people really see it. When we get nice certificates, when we finish it, mine, from when I did it, and I'm actually what's called a train the trainer as well. So I actually certify the new mental health first aid instructors. I'm one of about 60 of us in the United States.
Okay.
But that certificate back up there by the shield in between the flag, that is literally my certificate from when I became just a mental health first aider, not even an instructor.
Wow.
That's how proud I was. And that was probably 10 years ago, 10 years ago. It's been a minute.
Oh my goodness. Well, we're going to have to talk off air, because like I've mentioned, we are getting some of our employees through the instructor development course. And so we're looking for an instructor development course. So I'm going to need to talk to you offhand, because to get this instructor course, and for listeners too, this isn't just privy to me. This is, if you're able to provide this, you're an instructor, you're a train the trainer, then this is something that people, if you allow us to contact you directly after this podcast, and people can say, hey, I'm interested. Do I have the qualifications? I understand there's an application process, and there's, you know, there's a lot of application work, paperwork. So I get that. But if people are interested, if they could reach out to you to learn more about this, that would be fantastic. But I want to hold on to the thought that you were just mentioning there, that people don't remember so much the 100 slides. They are really remembering the stories and experiences that an instructor, a facilitator are bringing to the table, and maybe even pulling some stories out of the students that are in the class. And so I really agree with that. Have there been any stories that stick out to you that your students have brought to you during class, and maybe some situations that, hey, you know, your students, like, because I get it. I was an instructor as well. And it never seems to fail, right? You always have the jokester, the person that has all the stories, or the quiet one. Was there any memorable stories that really stick out to you from your courses?
So I won't go deep into it, but what I will say is the application is not terribly difficult, right? Okay. It really is just expressing an interest and maybe some background in being an instructor. Even if you've never been an instructor, you can still become an instructor. You're just articulating, what do I bring to the table and why, right? What is this going to do for my profession, my audience, my community? I do community trainings for just the community every once in a while. I do much more on the violence prevention right now for the community than I can mental health first aid, just because of the length of time involved and how busy things have gotten. Sure. But to the second point, absolutely, I welcome people to reach out. I will, unless it gets lost somewhere, I will always respond to everyone. And I will be more than happy to provide any information I can about mental health first aid. And then I will help connect them to the website or wherever they need to go for the next steps, depending on the conversation and where they're at. But I'm happy to talk, just really talk about it. And I'm not pumping up anything. I mean, I love it because, as I said, I've seen the impact at work and I've seen the impact at home. I'm just going to give my home example real quick, to be honest with you.
I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. We really learn. One of the biggest things I took away from it is we call it de-escalation in the training, but it's also escalation avoidance. So I have two boys, 18-year-old and one going on 12, and we have some lived experience with some anger management challenges, some other things, right? Sure. But we'll stick with the anger management. So what I'm about to say can also be related to the workplace, especially in a male-dominated workplace. So if I tell my loved one to do something, and they're already kind of right here, right? Mm-hmm. And then I come in and I tell them to do something. Well, a lot of times what happens? They get kind of not so polite in their response and they escalate. So then what do we typically do? Then I try to, and then what happens, right?
Explosion. Eventually,
exactly. We leave. We got to we got to finish. We'll come back to this later, right? But we didn't resolve the problem. All we did was got really mad and it didn't turn out well. And we still have to come back later to resolve the problem. Mm-hmm. So I've just learned that, do I still yell on occasion, but not anywhere near as much as, you know, I told you my background and you've seen my background, right? So really it was my way or the highway, but I've learned just have a conversation with my loved one, with my coworker, with my subordinate, with my service member that is on my team, treating them with respect, treating them with dignity. I say, whether it's a mental health challenge or violence prevention, we never want to take away someone's self-esteem.
Yes.
They are probably, and especially males, right? But I say that, and that's not even true. We don't want to take away someone's self-esteem. Because when we do that, then we make it more difficult. It becomes another barrier for them wanting to seek whatever the support is for a mental health challenge, or it makes it more difficult to keep them off of, and we're not doing that in this particular podcast, but what's called the pathway to violence. We can help keep them from getting on that pathway and help them take an exit ramp if they're already on that pathway.
Yeah, now, and you just mentioning that makes me, we'll get into, we'll finish that thought too, if your students had any, you know, memorable experiences. But as you're speaking, I am seeing the connection point. I know you're a subject matter expert in workplace violence as well. And so I could only imagine the connection and correlation you've seen. Of course, talking out loud, of course you've seen the connection in the two, and especially with your background. But I'd love to get into that too after that. But yeah, any other memorable stories from your students sharing? Maybe some of the stories are that they were going through at that time during the course, and how maybe this course helped them.
Yeah, you know, the most prevalent ones are related to suicide. We literally, okay, for one of our courses at my old agency, we had a married couple who was in the training. And fortunately, early on, we didn't know before the training. We like to find this out in advance, but we didn't know till we got in the training that they had lost their son to suicide. Their son had died by suicide within a year of that training. And so we... part of being an instructor is making sure that we are able to handle situations, because probably one every 8 to 10 classes, I have to support somebody that's going through a difficult time. And it's usually going to be around the discussion on suicide, but I have had it around psychosis. And of course the other, so that was the one where they contributed greatly, but it was difficult for them. When we were watching the videos on suicide, literally one of them was like this, but they were there because they wanted to be there. And we gave them every bit of safety. We always set it up with a safety statement. Hey, we're about ready to talk about suicide. We have parameters where if you need to step out, we tell everybody how that they can do that. If they need to talk to one of us, right? But the point is they stayed, they contributed greatly. They didn't go, we didn't make it therapy. That's not what mental health first aid is, right? They made it valuable. And when they left, they were so thankful that we were sharing this information with others, right? Because what do we do when we live through a trauma? We live, part of our recovery is helping others. And that's where they were at. They want to help others. And I say want because I guarantee, even though I don't see them anymore, I guarantee they still want to. Now, others are panic attacks. We hear stories of individuals or family members that live with panic attacks. And so those are typically pretty good to really help explain how to identify when someone is experiencing a panic attack, that they may, they really do feel like they're going to die, right? And so when they're expressing that they feel like they're going to die, you can't go, oh, you're overreacting. We can't do that with any of this. We do what's called going to their space, right? When I need mental health first aid, right, then I can say things like that. But when I'm helping somebody else, I go to their space. But they help us walk through what to look for, what someone might be experiencing, and then how to actually help out. And I'll tell you, I've been traveling a lot since, you know, COVID is, it's still there, but now of course the restrictions are not there. And probably every third or fourth flight, I will end up being either in the airport or sitting next to someone that is not comfortable with flying. And so I basically just talk to them. I say, hey, how you doing? My name's Tony. Looks like you're going through a bit of a difficult time. May I talk to you? May I put my hand on your shoulder? Right? What can I do? It's all about providing options. What can I do to help you? Or what would you like to do to help yourself? Because I can't make, even my two boys, I can't make them do what a therapist tells them. Right? So it's best if we can make them part of the ownership of the decision.
So
suicide, panic attacks, sometimes psychosis, not as often, definitely depression, but pretty much everything we talk about, we will get experiences because we create that environment for that sharing. Not therapy, once again, just short sharing.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, just everything that you're mentioning really aligns with, a counselor that I recently spoke with one of our local Northern Range Behavioral Health facilities. She says a huge bulk of her clientele are blue collar workers. And when I initially asked her, why is that? Why? And she said, because a lot of the times these men and women, but she's like, you know, just practically speaking, the men I work with, they're carrying a burden so heavy that they feel no one sees. And a lot of the time, she said that a lot of these men don't, you know, they have the pressure from being the breadwinner, working conditions that they're sometimes working through here in Colorado. You know, our seasons right now, it's dark, it's gloomy, it's snowy, it's kind of depressing, you know? And so we have those seasons. And so she just mentioned the working conditions with the piled stress of finances, with the piled stress of at this time going through the holidays, and then just to top it off, feeling like no one is hearing me. And how often do you feel that a lot of the workplace violence and the mental health scenarios that you just mentioned are rooted from not having people feeling that they don't have an outlet to feel heard? Do you feel that that's the root of a lot of these issues that you've mentioned?
Really wonderful and insightful question. From the mental health side, not so much, honestly, okay. Because most organizations now do have like that employee assistance program. Yeah, but the key really is, no matter how many times we say, well, you can go to the EAP, right? The employee assistance program, six visits, you don't have to report it to anybody. We still if it's within our work confine, it's still uncomfortable.
Sure.
You know, even for me in the military, we have psychologists, we have behavioral health specialists, we have new programs that are out there now to support us, but I have a top secret clearance. So I still would have that concern if I hadn't already experienced what I know, right? Sure. As far as on paper, the Department of Defense says, hey, you know what, if you're going through a difficult time, just make sure you report it, get the help, stay with the help, et cetera, right? In reality, it works that way quite often, but it's not an absolute perfect science or anything, you know? And so the same goes for organizations, schools, but at the end of the day, you know, and I know you initially mentioned males, and we are talking, you know, some professions where it probably still is more male dominated, you know, for many men and even women though, we feel like it can't be about me. Okay. I have too much responsibility. It can't be. Law enforcement is huge, right?
Yep.
I'm the one, I'm supposed to be wearing the cape and saving the day. I can't need help, but I'll be honest. So you probably heard, I know Kansas City is about in between. I'm in St. Louis. You're out there in Colorado. So you know about the event that occurred at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl parade. Did you hear about that from 2 days ago?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, okay. So there was a, what would be called a mass shooting there. It doesn't seem as though it was necessarily targeted violence. It seems as though it was more a couple of people got mad at each other, happened to have weapons, and engaged in what's called spontaneous violence. Mm-hmm. But the point of my story there, we'll do another podcast on all that, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
The point of my story is multiple times have I heard like the law enforcement leadership, the mayor talking about, hey, you know what, our first responders, and there were 800 first responders there, our first responders, we've created outlets, we've got people coming in to talk to them, because out of that event, 22 people were shot, of which 12 somewhere in there were children. That puts it in a whole different, I don't care who you are, that puts it in a whole different realm for us when children are involved.
Absolutely.
But then even so much as the hospital, they were getting additional support, basically, critical incident peer support or peer support, right? Or other behavioral specialists that get the groups of the same profession together. Mm-hmm. Everybody in that has the opportunity to be getting additional help, including the parade goers. So, I mean, that's a really amazing testament to what Kansas City, you know, is doing in this instance, at least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tony, I agree with you too. Hey, that's a conversation at another time, because I would love to talk with you about this more, and diving into the workplace violence piece of it too. You know, we barely even touched that, but I mean, my mind is going in so many places with the mental health first aid. You covered so much, and I want to honor and appreciate you for that. If you're listening right now and you are on the fence of whether or not your company even needed a topic like this trained at your facility, I can guarantee afterwards you have the confidence knowing that this is not a monthly safety topic that needs to be lightly briefed over within your organization. This is a topic that's here to stay, and that is very clear. This is a must-have. To me, it's even more of a mandatory topic over an OSHA regulation, an OSHA topic to cover, like it, as bloodborne pathogens is required to be trained on mental health first aid. And I love how this class, as you mentioned, covers yourself and self-care, as well as how to identify opportunities to help and care for my coworkers. And this isn't just coworkers. Like you've mentioned several times, these are life strategies to get you through the seasons that are always going to be fluctuating in your life. And so knowing how to navigate that for your family is going to impact your life forever. So thank you so much, Tony. I feel like we just talked for 5 minutes and it's somehow we're over on time.
Oh, really?
I want to respect the time that you gave me. So any other final thoughts that you have around this topic, or even if someone is going through a difficult time right now, I always want to acknowledge that it's not always sunny roses for everyone right now. And so, you know, maybe someone is struggling or they know of somebody who is. Do you have any final thoughts, any tidbits on how to maybe navigate some of those waters?
Yeah, just thank you so much for having this discussion. Thank you for having me, but more importantly, thank you for allowing this discussion and for all of your listeners and viewers. I hope that they will keep the message going forward.
Absolutely.
Because honestly, when we look at social media, you're a social media expert. We know when we send out that cute kitten video, 10 million people are going to get that thing, whether they like it, love it, tweet it. But when we're talking about mental health or violence prevention, anything like that, we really need to support one another. So just so you know, I've already followed you on LinkedIn.
Perfect.
So I've already connected there. I'll be connecting with you.
Perfect.
But, you know, the only points that I would really say are, you said it, just be human, right? And we can't all be there all the time. Mm-hmm. And so we're not always going to be great mental health first aiders, because sometimes it is about us. So take that time, learn how to realize when we're getting overstressed ourselves, because then we'll better be able to see it in others. And you know, I say because of a few things, but one, mental health first aid, and the other, I'm just going to lean into faith for just one moment. You know, with those two things right there, they really just create such a better opportunity for us to go out and I like to say be givers. If that's where we're at in life, right now we're givers. When we're young, we're takers, and at points in life we may need to be takers. But when we lean into what we learn in mental health first aid, being human, and then our faith, then we really can go forward. And I like to say what's called the multiplier effect. If I train 15 people tomorrow, those 15 are literally going to touch thousands of lives in their behavior, whether they introduce mental health first aid or not. But maybe I just become a better person. Mm-hmm. I learn how to take that deep breath when I'm feeling like I want to yell, right? And
sure.
So
yep.
that would be my tip right there. Just be yourself, be human, and be willing to learn more about how to be supportive.
Well, oh my goodness, Tony, your words, your advice, you having the courage to share your stories have impacted people's lives forever. And so I really appreciate all the advice and all everything that you shared with today's podcast. I really appreciate it. And guys, if you are listening, you want to stay connected to Tony, we're going to link ways to get in touch with him. If you have any questions, you know, if you want to learn further about the mental health first aid side, and even again, the workplace violence piece, we're going to obviously have Tony's full bio here, so you'll be able to read more on that. And if you want to stay connected with him, we'll connect all those social platforms to do so. Thank you again, Tony. I really appreciate you, and I can't wait to chat soon.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you and to meet you.
Thank you.